You're listening to Catholic Chicago Week in Review on Relevant Radio 950 AM and 930 AM. During the next hour, the Archdiocese of Chicago brings you conversation about the people, events, and issues that touch our lives. Welcome to Catholic Chicago Week in Review.
Good morning. I'm Jim Dish with the Archdiocese of Chicago's Radio TV office, joining you on Relevant Radio 950 and 930 AM. Every Saturday morning, we bring you highlights of our Catholic Chicago radio programs that air throughout the week. Our broadcast week began with our Catholic Schools Today program, hosted by Catholic School Superintendent Dr. Jim Rigg and Holy Name Cathedral Rector Father Greg Sakowicz. They talked about a big victory for St. John Brebeuf students at the Illinois State Science Fair.
Students from across the region attended the Illinois State Science Fair Finals at Southern Illinois University in Carbondale on May 3rd and 4th. And amongst them were four students from St. John Brebeuf, a school in Niles, who competed and received two awards. In addition to competing, two students also reported for the school's media department and wrote a firsthand experience for their newspaper. I was at St. John Brebeuf probably 6 or 8 weeks ago, and I just love learning more about this media department. We've got some very eager and talented students who are involved, and those two of those students, two seventh graders, are on the phone with us right now. We have Olivia and Reed. And then we have two staff members from the school, Michael Giordano, who's the Director of Marketing and Enrollment, and Dr. Mary Maloney, who is the principal of St. John Brebeuf School. Are you all with us this morning?
Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
How's it out in Niles like it is downtown in Chicago here, about 45 degrees?
Yes, it's just as cold.
Pretty chilly. And Olivia and Reed, you are working with the school's media department, is that right?
Yes,
we are part of WSJB, which is our news.
Yeah, so Olivia, tell us a little bit more about that. So what is this station, and what do you do, and how often do you broadcast?
So it's a group of like five or six seventh graders right now, and we report on sporting events, like State Science Fair, like we just did, and we're excited for new events coming soon.
Now, for both Olivia and Reed, is this your first year with the radio station?
Yes, this is both of our first years doing something like this.
Now, how many years has the radio station existed?
Well, we've actually, the radio station did exist previously, and we brought it back after a couple, maybe about a 4 or 5 year hiatus, and I just fell in love with the idea of having a student-run media service that covers not just broadcast within the school, but also internet-based. And it was just a really unique way, I felt, for us to get our message out, to our, let people,
So now the radio station from St. John Brebeuf, the signal would be what, within the school and on the internet?
Yeah, primarily we are internet-based. We do have the capability to broadcast within the school, but our focus right now is going to be through our social media channels.
That is terrific.
Cool. So, Olivia and Reed, were you amongst those that went to the Illinois State Science Fair Finals?
Yes, we were.
So, can you give us a recap in your best radio voices?
So, when we first got there, it was like a big, big college, and we were pretty nervous. But once you presented, we felt a lot more better and a lot more calm.
Yeah, and then we were really nervous when we got judged for the first time. But as we were going along, we answered the questions persistently, and we really went strong.
Now, Dr. Maloney, you must be extremely proud of these children and the accomplishments of what they all did.
Oh, absolutely. And there's a process that we followed to have the students qualify to even be able to compete at the state level. First, they had to win the top awards at our local school-based science fair, and then they moved on to the regional competition where they had to qualify at that venue as well. So they've gone through several different processes just to get to the state level, and then to absolutely take the top honors and the top awards for the entire state of Illinois I'm so honored to
have them as students
at our school. And it's also a nod to the rigorous level of our science program. Yeah. And our science teacher, Janice Bargamian, really helps facilitate the process for the kids.
And so back to you, Reed and Olivia, maybe starting with Reed and then Olivia. Tell us what your science fair project was on and how you did.
So our science fair project was on which moisturizer works best when applied to skin before our skin becomes jello. And we just tested six different lotions and saw how they would react to the gelatin over a two-week period.
No. Okay, now run that by me again. You broke up a little bit, and this is going above me already. So describe it again.
So we tested six different lotions on jello models of skin. And we tested them over a two-week period to test the weight and height of each of them.
That's incredible.
Why jello?
Because we found that the gelatin was the closest that we can get to skin.
The gelatin is close you can get to skin.
Yes.
Now, what are you in the background there? Were you guys in the L station or something?
Probably at the school.
Right at the school. The trade station.
Olivia, why don't we go to you? Tell us a little bit about your project.
No, I was partners with Reed.
Oh, same project.
We did the same project.
So what was the what was your final conclusion? Which moisturizer was best?
So from our data, we realized that 100% petroleum jelly, Equate brand, was the best for keeping your skin moisturized.
That's interesting. I remember when I was in eighth grade at Mary State of Wisdom, I had a science project, and I made my brother disappear, my little brother disappear.
Did you bring him back?
No. Not just joking. Just joking, kids. Be nice to your siblings.
Yeah.
Well, so, Reed and Olivia, do you feel like at the end of the day, your experiences at the Illinois State Science Fair were positive? Did you learn things? Are you encouraged to do more with science?
Oh, yes, definitely. I really liked the experience, and just being judged was a very learning experience for me, because then I realized, like, what I need to know for, like, next time and how I can better myself. So that was pretty cool.
Now, Michael Giordano, the Director of Marketing Enrollment at St. John Brebeuf, your role in this whole thing was getting the PR out for this?
Absolutely, yes. And we felt that, like I said, the story itself, and we've had this, our science fair in general, we've covered this from our school science fair, which took place in early February, and it was just nice to be able to watch the story progress as Olivia and Reed went to our regionals at Niles North High School, won there, and then went down to Carbondale last week. So we've been covering this for several weeks.
It's almost like Loyola University and the NCAA last year, as they kept moving forward. Just the same thing with Olivia and Reed. They just kept moving forward.
Absolutely.
Which is that's fun, because that's tremendous competition at that level.
Absolutely. And Dr. Maloney, you mentioned earlier that you had done some new things in your science program at St. John Brebeuf. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, we are working very hard to make sure we are NGSS aligned, and that is the Next Generation Science Standard. And we are making sure that our lab is fully equipped with all the pieces of parts that make a successful science lab. And the students have a variety of opportunities to actually use the scientific process in many different ways. So they're very familiar with the process by the time they're getting to their science fair project.
Congratulations to teachers, staff, students, and parents at St. John Brebeuf School in Niles. Next up, our Black Catholic Initiative radio program hosted by Deacon John Cook. He visited with Sister Jamie Phelps, who shared practical advice to improve relationships in both the family and church.
You know, we only have a half an hour show, unfortunately, and I would love to talk to you all day with all the knowledge and wisdom you have. But, you know, I want to get some practical advice from you, some things that we can do as a community to offset this derailment or get back on track. What are the things that we can do?
I think we can start with, hopefully, with the churches providing family activities at the parish. And they can come in as a family. They can do age-appropriate things and then come back and have a family gathering. So if we begin to model gathering families and having them talk about the important issues that are impacting the family. We also could resurrect the block clubs. Remember, at least when I was growing up, we had a block club, and all the members of the block, or if you're in an apartment building, all the members in the apartment can come down and meet and talk about what's going on in the neighborhood and what you need to do to be in charge of your neighborhood.
Sister, this is what I've noticed, okay, because I've been a block club president, it seems like forever. Mm-hmm. However, you know, I haven't been active since I had my heart operation.
Right.
It mm-hmm. appears to me that the block club, just like any other organization or club, you know, including the church, you got 20% of the people doing the work, 80% of the people saying good job. And it's yeah, exactly, clapping. Yeah, they're happy when you do something, but they're on the sidelines watching you do it. And as soon as you say you need some help, you find yourself sitting in a room with about 3 to 5 people. And the percentages have gotten even higher, you know, for those who are watching, the onlookers, and lower for those who are doing the work. And it's just, that's my observation.
Okay, and I know what you're saying, but we also know that the demand on people outside of the block club meeting in terms of their work demands and all that
good
kind
point.
Of stuff are high.
Good point.
So my whole thing is, we, you know, the thing about different gifts,
mm-hmm.
you have the gift.
Well, too much is given is what I understand. Much is expected, yes.
Yeah, but you have the gift to be attentive and the time. But what I also say is that whenever each one teach one,
okay,
so you need to look around in your neighborhood
yes,
and find
ma'am.
One or two people that you can mentor.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, you're teaching them to be attentive, to do the things that you see, and then you work together as a team.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe that we have to work towards the future. When I was working in administration, I always had a team. If I had dropped dead, the program would have continued because the team members knew all the essential stuff that needed to be done.
Sister, that is so powerful. You know, that's it right there. And let me just say this. I'm sorry to interrupt you. But what I've seen is your generation they're not so kind in mentoring. They're not so quick to want to give up their position, and that becomes a problem when, you know, you don't have people willing to mentor. Now, I heard you loud and clear, because that's exactly what I'm doing with the baseball organization, with my little league. We are preparing our youth to be peer on peer mentors. So the high schoolers are going to be working with the elementary kids, and
us as
adults are going to be teaching the high schoolers so that they could run the organization themselves. So I got you. You're exactly right. And we're trying to do that with the Little League. And I know that there's so many other examples that you could use. But I think, though, that the Little League in itself is a good opportunity for families to get involved. You know, I mean, that's just one example, of course, but you're absolutely right.
With the Little League, we have to expand the Little League to other neighborhoods. You have it in your neighborhood, but there are neighborhoods that don't have Little League, where the leadership has not been fostered. So it's that whole principle of each one teach one.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're going to act as a community, we can't say, look, I'm doing this over here in this community, you know, and they're going to hell in the basket. We have to look. If you're doing it well in your community, what about the one right next to you?
Okay.
Or the one two communities over?
Mm-hmm.
We have to really see the city of Chicago, west side, south side, north side. We have to see it as a community. And we may have to work in our units, south side unit, west side unit, but we have to keep expanding.
Mm.
And teaching and listening. Remember, when Jesus died, he prepared his apostles to take over.
He sure did. And they took over.
They weren't ready to. They were afraid of it. That's why they went and hid after they crucified him. they got to leave. They're going to get us next.
Right. You're right. And they're doing that now. They're doing that now.
But by the power of the Holy Spirit.
Come on.
They came up and came out.
Well, you know, after Martin was killed.
Pardon me?
I'm saying after Martin was killed, after who? I mean, we've had so many prominent blacks killed, you know, and over the years. And I think, you know, people have just gotten scared to step up on a national level, even on a local level. You know, they're kind of afraid to speak up or stand out because they're afraid that they're going to get cut off at the knees.
Well,
I believe that, sister. I believe that.
I believe this too. I understand fear, but you're going to die sometime.
Come on.
And you might as well die for a purpose. Now, I'm not just saying that very easily.
I know.
But we call ourselves Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're calling ourselves Christians, we have to imitate Jesus. We have to be followers of Jesus and to live our lives with the principles that Jesus has. And his principle was he gave of himself.
And he
called others to learn how to give.
He did the will of the Father. He did the will of the Father, despite the fact that he didn't necessarily want to take that cup.
Exactly. And if God has given you a gift, God has given us a gift to be used for the community.
Amen.
So everything that we think every gift that we have, and we all have different gifts, those gifts are not for self-aggrandizement. Look at me, I'm all this in a bag of chips. Those gifts are given to enrich, sustain, and nurture the human community. Because Jesus came that we might live and live more fully our humanity.
Yes.
In right relationships with one another.
Yes.
And some of that has, with this individualism and all this kind of, we've lost insight about we are called to be a community. We start off in a community, ideally a family.
Sounds like a marketing objective.
If in fact we've got dysfunctional families, the church has to help in helping families become more functional. You can, and we've got a lot of social workers, and I did it as a social worker. We did family therapy.
Mm-hmm.
We taught people family skills.
Mm-hmm.
Because the grandmothers used to teach it. And the great grandmothers.
That's right.
In the absence of grandmothers and stuff, then the church has to take on a grandmother, teach the young women and men how to mother, how to father. That's what it means to be an extended family. Remember we used to have an extended family in the black community?
Ooh, yes.
In my neighborhood, everybody, all the young, but my parents were the older, one of the leading families. We had a couple of leading families. But all the kids came to our house, ate at our table, went playing with us in the forest preserves and stuff. And their parents came along. My parents parented the parents. And so we had a sense of community.
Mm-hmm.
And if you bothered my brother or my sister, mm-hmm. or you bothered somebody else, you had to meet all of us.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have to do a throwdown thing. You know?
No, we did circle. We did a peace circle.
they knew. They knew that nobody would act out.
That's
and
right.
Individuals would not act out because they knew. Like I know it was my mother. I did something when I was a little kid.
Ooh, Lord.
These little women were walking down the street. In the old term, we used to call it switching,
mm-hmm.
moving their derriere.
Yes.
And I start singing a song, the way they wiggle, when they walk, they make up, laugh, and talk. It's an old jazz song.
Uh-huh.
They got upset, took me up to my mother. My mother was surprised that I had disrespected the elders.
That's so funny.
I had to apologize to the elders. And these elders were like 20 or 30 years, 20, 22-year-old women.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But I had to apologize to them. And they left the house. And I said, but Mama, they were wiggly. It is not your place to tell them about their wiggly. You know, but I mean, that's an example of social control.
Got you.
But we kids also knew if anything was happening, we could ask any adult in that neighborhood to come and help us.
That's
and they
right.
did.
That's right.
And the adults, and then we had a little lady who taught us courtesy. And Miss Umar, Little Neighbor Social Service Saving Club, she created for us.
Mm.
And this is one woman. So it's that we have to recreate community. And some of we grandmothers and older people with nothing to do can take that time and nurture the next generation.
Yeah. It sounds like a lot of work, only because we've been so far removed from that, because it's not like it didn't exist.
But we call ourselves Christians.
Amen.
Thanks to Deacon John and Sister Jamie. Stick around. We'll hear about the great work being done by Catholic Charities on Chicago's Southwest Side. Back after a short break.
Hi, my name is Ramona. I'm a caseworker at Catholic Charities. I wish you could meet Craig, age 23, shot 3 times and homeless for 2 years before I met him. The more we met and I listened to him, the more he impressed me. We're working on his resume and job hunting. We're called Chicago's Good Samaritan, and you can be one too. Might you have a job for Craig and thousands of others like him? Join us at CatholicCharities.net.
Hi, my name is Mary Bielski, and I'm a national speaker and youth minister. And I'm excited to introduce you to our third Echo Theology of the Body Camp, held right here in Chicago. At Echo, we explore the teachings of St. John Paul II and address questions on themes like life, love, and human sexuality. Teens and young adults, please join us June 14th to the 20th at St. Xavier University for an amazing experience of prayer, fellowship, and tackling the deepest mysteries of life and love and even more. More information can be found on respectlifechicago.org or call 312-534-5355. Again, that's 312-534-5355.
Welcome back to Catholic Chicago Week in Review, where we bring you highlights of Archdiocese of Chicago radio programs that can be heard Monday through Friday from 8 to 9 in the morning on WNDZ 750 AM. Catholic Charities regional offices function as local hubs where community residents can access much-needed services. Catholic Charities President Monsignor Michael Boland and his guests discussed programs coordinated by their regional office on Chicago's Southwest Side.
You know, for more than 100 years, Catholic Charities has served those in need in Cook Counties and Lake Counties with a comprehensive network of services that range from food pantries to mental health counseling, affordable housing, and senior services. We're really one of the last in the country of what we call a full-service agency. That we do have services, not all, but we do have services from infants and toddlers all the way through life, and from housing to shelters to clothing to apartments to care for our seniors. We have a skilled nursing home, assisted living buildings. So there's many ways that Catholic Charities touches the lives of over a million people each year within Cook Counties and Lake Counties. And really, we always want to try to make sure that Catholic Charities is present to communities so that it is as easy as possible for those who need us to be able to come into a place hopefully they're familiar with in their communities. So in Catholic Charities, we have many regional services that serve as a function as local hubs where community residents can access our services in many times in different languages, several languages. Our regional advisory boards, which help assist all of us at Catholic Charities in the administration of our services, really help us with their professionalism, how they might guide and support the operations of the offices in partnerships with parishes and schools who volunteer and donate to assist anyone in need on their path to self-sufficiency. And it's really their professionalism that they bring and their guide to help guide and help us to hear the voices of those who are most struggling. Regional office networks with other community groups and organizations to strengthen the safety net in their geographical areas. One of the biggest challenges we see today is the erosion especially after several years without a state budget, the safety net really was really a challenge at the present moment to try to respond to the needs. Almost 5 years ago, Catholic Charities recognized Chicago's Southwest Side is an area of high need for families, and so the Southwest Community Office began with roots in the communities of Back of the Yards, Brighton Park, Greater Lawn, Marquette Park, Little Village, and Pilsen. Well, for me, that was my neighborhood. I grew up at St. Gall at 55th and Kedzie and spent a wonderful life there. I went to Hubbard High School, and so it was really a great place to grow up. And it still is a great place to grow up. And it's a great community of people who are really, in many ways, the backbones of so many wonderful things. Families, family life, you know, hard work. And it is really a wonderful place. And so as we talk about today, we're kind of looking at those communities today, which kind of gives us a sense of where we're going to be talking about. But it really is a great sense of a lot of life that is going on there in all those communities. And Catholic Charities is there to support them, strengthen them, and to help them. And although there is a mix of ethnicities present, the communities are predominantly Spanish-speaking, with the majority being immigrants from Latin America who have come here to make a better life for their families. When I grew up, it was different ethnic groups, but strength. Everyone looked upon them as strengths. I mean, one of my best friends was Wayne Hernandez, who lived a couple blocks away. So we had, when we went back, you know, there's different ethnic groups, but ours was mostly a lot of people from a lot of different places. But it was really a wonderful experience because we knew and understood and experienced and kind of celebrated the fact of people coming from maybe Europe, coming from Latin America, coming from different places. So it was really a wonderful experience growing up, and we all looked upon that as a strength, especially as we grew older. I'm very grateful joining me today to talk about more about our services and many programs coordinated through our City Southwest Regional Office is Mary Lou Gonzalez, who is our City Southwest Regional Director, and Medea Vera, our City Southwest Regional Advisory Board member. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's great to have you with us today. And maybe Mary Lou, you could begin by telling us about the impact of services that have made in the city's Southwest region.
Well, thank you, Monsignor, first of all, for having us here this morning. The City Southwest Regional Office has been operating now for 5 years, and our services as a network of the 160-plus programs that Catholic Charities has is really the resource or the location where people will go and ask for those services in those programs, whether it's need for rental assistance or housing or food pantries or immigration services or legal assistance. That is what the regional office really does. And we don't do it alone. We also get to know the community itself. So, you know, 5 years ago when I first started, we actually did an assessment, a needs assessment. We had to do a needs assessment in order to find out if what we were embarking on was really what Catholic Charities needed to do or do more of. Without a doubt, it has grown dramatically from, you know, making support groups for women to actually having counseling services, not only at the regional office of St. Gall, but at the parishes of like St. Michael's, as well as St. Gall, as well as in Little Village over at St. Agnes, or in different locations throughout the Southwest community. And I think we really have made an impact in the needs of the community, from running an after-school program or a summer program called the Turtles for little people from the ages of 5 years old up to eight. It's all run by interns from Mexico, which we have this transnational agreement, which really helps in creating an atmosphere of trust as well as an atmosphere of security and welcoming and hospitality, which is a big mantra of the City Southwest office.
Mm-hmm. That's really important because, you know, hospitality is really a critical piece.
To hear more about the many services offered by Catholic Charities and how you can volunteer or donate, go to CatholicCharities.net. Next up, Jennifer Delvaux of the Office for Evangelization and Missionary Discipleship led a discussion on what it means to be a missionary disciple.
I send you out on a mission of love. I send you out on a mission of love. I send you out on a mission of love. And know that I am with you always until the end of the world.
Good morning, and welcome to Mission of Love, the radio show for the Office for Evangelization and Missionary Discipleship at the Archdiocese of Chicago. My name is Jennifer Delvaux. I'm an evangelization coordinator and your co-host today, along with my coworker, Jose Coronel. Good morning, Jose.
Good morning, Jen. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great this morning. With God, even mornings are possible.
Yeah. In our office, I'm the morning person, and Jose most definitely is not. So this was an early start for you. Thanks for joining me this morning.
Not a problem.
So we're excited today because we're going to spend some time talking about the evangelization days that we just had, and we have some exciting guests in studio, and then we'll also talk a little bit more about the role of hospitality and welcome as we look to our future. So what we'd like to do is actually, we're excited. We have a clip of Loretta Freilich, who is from St. Luke Parish in River Forest. And she attended the Renew My Church Summit in October of 2018. And she also came to our evangelization days back in March. And this is what she has to say.
I loved that so many people came out on a night after work to share and learn and increase our opportunities to renew our church. There were tremendous examples and great faith-sharing questions, starting points. I particularly enjoyed looking at the list of the things you look for in a good evangelist and the difference between a disciple and a missionary disciple. And because the Great Commission calls us to be missionary disciples, to go out and bring in the lost, even if they're already sitting in our pews, it was a great opportunity to get some new skills, revive old skills, and to be refreshed to renew my church.
I love that clip from Loretta. I think she actually did a phenomenal job summarizing both what happened and a bit of impact, because these evangelization days were opportunities we had all over the Archdiocese, and we had almost 1,200 people attend them. And we offered them in English, Spanish, and Polish, where we were able to talk a little bit about what do we mean about a culture of evangelization, talk about some of those ideas that she mentioned about discipleship, missionary discipleship, and then at the end, really make sure that people had pieces that they could take back home with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, such as the parable of the sower. And they also went through an exercise on how to build an evangelization team as well. So that was really great.
And we're excited because we have with us in studio somebody who experienced it also. So, Jose, do you want to introduce our guest?
Yes. Today we have with us Irene Saldana. She is a parishioner at St. Mary of Chisahoa. And she was at the Evangelization Day, and we asked her to come in here today just to talk to us a little bit about her experience in the Evangelization Days. But before that, we would like to get to know who she is a little bit and how she came to encounter Jesus in her life. So, Irene, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure. I was excited when you called. Oh, my experience, when I attended the retreat, there were several retreats that I have attended, but this one was a special one. It's the name of the retreat program is El Cine, and it was produced by a Mexican priest from Mexico, and it was approved by Pope John Paul. It's been around almost close to 40 years now. And one of our priests, our church is St. Mary of Chisahoa, and we have the Redemptorists who are the pastors and our priests that were in Central America, Argentina, Bolivia.
And one of the priests brought this evangelization to us.
Mm-hmm.
They speak very, very good Spanish. And so it was a very different retreat. We had a personal encounter with the Lord. After the Mass, we invoked the Holy Spirit, and I felt him. I felt him with a very beautiful, cool breeze that came. It took my breath away. And we started the Catechist, the first book. It's a small book, but it lasts for about a year. And then we learn more about our faith. And we learn more that Jesus should be in our center of our hearts. And after that, the first year, well, we continue. The second year, I've been in this program for 13 years.
Wow, that's a long time.
Yes.
How long is it like a program? Is it a catechetical program? What is these years that you've been in it?
Okay, it's a catechetical program where we learned about. We have eight years of catechism, and then we have 3 years of Bible study.
Mm.
And that's the program. And our goal is to be disciple missionaries, to go out into the houses and ask them to come. And us having the testimony of how our lives changed. Mm. The first book is Vida Nueva, which means a new life. And we start encountering more of our faith by not paying more attention to the material things in our lives, but to the spiritual things in our life.
Mm-hmm.
And believe you me, a lot of people have changed. We pray. There's three factors in our communities. After we have a retreat, we form a community. Right now we have 15 communities, and we're over 120 members. Mm-hmm. in our parish. And what we do is we have the palabra de Dios, which means the word of God. We study the Bible. The second thing that our community has is prayer, la oración. Prayer is very powerful, and we've been witnesses of how powerful it has been with some of our members. And the third one is the cross, la cruz. We have to carry our cross. We have to make sacrifices. And if each community does that, we progress. And we see the changes in us, in the families. For an example, we have had members who used to drink a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Once they came into this program, they stopped drinking. Mm. They turned their lives completely around. I used to go to, before I even had my retreat, and many of us, we used to go, had nothing to do, let's go to the mall, let's buy things that we don't even need. And now I go maybe once a month, but that's not my priority anymore. That's not my priority, so.
Thanks to Jen, Jose, and their guest for that conversation about missionary discipleship. Stick around for highlights from Built on the Rock and Mission Matters. Back in a moment.
Hi, my name is Craig. I was homeless for 2 years, then I met Miss Ramona, a case manager at Catholic Charities. She found a place for me to live and is helping me with a resume and finding a job. I feel safe and away from the gun violence I know too well, having been a victim of it. The more I meet with Catholic Charities, the better I feel. They have changed my life. They're called Chicago's Good Samaritans, but to me, they are turnaround experts. Care to help? Visit CatholicCharities.net.
Have you checked out Chicago Catholic lately? Either in print or online, Chicago Catholic has informative and stimulating content, including news from the Archdiocese, beautiful photographs, and a thoughtful column by our publisher, Cardinal Blaise Supich. Editor Joyce DeRiga tells us about our current edition of Chicago Catholic.
Our annual Jubilarian edition includes profiles of our priests who are celebrating 25 and 50 years of ministry. St. Ethelreda Elementary School on Chicago's South Side has a championship chess team. Students from all grades learn patience, commitment, and strategy. Warriors for Peace, a youth group at St. Gall Parish, offers programs, activities, and spiritual support to help combat violence.
Subscribe now. Go to ChicagoCatholic.com or call 312-534-7777. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Chicago Catholic, a fresh approach to Catholic news.
Who am I? What does it mean to love? Why was I created? We'll address all of these great questions and more at Echo Chicago this June. Hello, I'm Dawn Fitzpatrick from Respect Life Ministries for the Archdiocese of Chicago. Echo Chicago is a Theology of the Body summer camp for teens and young adults. The Archdiocese is partnering with Dumox Ministries to present a week of prayer, fun, and immersion in the teachings of St. Pope John Paul II. This exciting camp will take place at St. Xavier University in Chicago, June 14th to the 20th. Registration's now open. Go to respectlifechicago.org or call 312-534-5355 for more information. That's respectlifechicago.org or call 312-534-5355. Early bird pricing is available until May 1st. All of us feel an echo in our heart to explore God's original creation and his true purpose for us. Join us in June for Echo Chicago.
Welcome back to Catholic Chicago Week in Review on Relevant Radio 950 and 930 AM. I'm Jim Dish at the Archdiocese of Chicago's radio TV office with highlights of local Catholic radio programs that can be heard Monday through Friday from 8 to 9 in the morning on 750 AM. Father Brito Birchmans and Sandy Labouvi co-host Built on the Rock, a program that helps listeners build their marriages and romantic relationships on the rock that is Christ. Let's listen in on some of this week's conversation that spun out of an earlier interview they did with a couple who had triplets.
We had talked a little bit about the distinction between fate and faith and really how important it is to have faith at the center of your relationship, which allows you to do things in a relationship that go against who you are naturally as a human being.
Yeah, but it's also the way to live.
It is true.
Imagine you didn't have faith. Life becomes such a burden.
Sure, sure. Absolutely. So we're going to move forward with some other topics, though, that had come up during our interview with Bob and Mary. And if you remember, so they had a very challenging pregnancy with triplets. Remember, the doctors even suggested a reduction, which Bob and Mary did not entertain for a moment because of their dedication to life, their admirable dedication to life. But it doesn't mean that their pregnancy was not without its challenges and without its fears. I remember at one point Mary saying she was scared to death, you know, being in that position. So during that time, Mary had actually turned to her aunt, who, if you recall, had battled pancreatic cancer, I believe she said it was, years and years earlier. And her aunt had shared with her that during that difficult time, very, very frightening time for her, she had practiced this form of meditative prayer that saw her through. And quite honestly, that they credit the miracle of her recovery too. And so we'd asked Mary about that. And Mary shared with us what that looked like. So I just wanted to go ahead and explain that. Mary had also said that she started using this form of prayer during her challenging pregnancy and truly believes that miracles resulted from it. So the way that prayer, that powerful prayerful meditation worked was that it, basically there were three phases to it. So her aunt would sit for 10 to 20 minutes twice a day, and the first phase of that prayer, she would begin picturing herself with Jesus, talking to Jesus. In her favorite places, she would just picture herself with Jesus. And if she was angry, she would talk to him about it. If she was afraid, scared, she would talk to him about it. Whatever her emotions were in that moment, she pictured herself sitting with Jesus, having a conversation with him about that. Then the next phase, she said she literally would picture her cancer being eaten away, almost as if the little Pac-Man in that game from years ago, chewing away the cancer, eating away the cancer. So she was picturing the healing already, which led then to the third phase and final phase of her meditation, which was to envision the future with a positive outcome, to envision the positivity. So Mary learned to do it within minutes, and it became very powerful for her. And she said that it was actually her most peace-filled time. And I think that is the peace that comes from being with Jesus, like this prayer had put her into that place where she was with him. So at those times then, she knew that everything would be okay.
Yeah. I mean, there are a couple of things from that insight. Number one is meditative prayer has always been recommended by all religions to take some time to quiet yourself, to center yourself. Think about our any given day. We are rushing from one thing to another.
Right.
And we are always thinking of what is coming next. Instead of waiting and reflecting, taking stock of where we are going.
Just being in that moment.
Yes.
Very difficult to do nowadays.
But also being in the moment. But what I mean is that you need to kind of reflect on the bigger picture.
Mm.
Not just caught up with just a little piece of this moment.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole picture. You know, that quieting is so good for you.
Mm-hmm.
They do it in the corporate world. You know, Japanese MBAs and business leaders would talk about that. You know? And it is talked about in the Indian spirituality, the Hindu spirituality, the Buddhist spirituality. And of course, in the Christian spirituality, the monks meditate every day. And even when I was religious, every day we had to spend half an hour at least in mental prayer. So it is very important, you know.
It's something that even the medical community has now put into practice.
Absolutely.
Their practices of mindfulness and meditation.
Exactly.
So yes, very, very important.
See, people say, I'm stressed.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get rid of stress? Meditation, quieting. Of course, sleep is another way you get rid of stress, but
you certainly don't get rid of it by going.
Exactly.
That's for sure.
And people want to increase the speed, they think that will help them.
Mm.
No.
Get to the next thing.
The other thing, what you said about positive visualization.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's used as a technique by athletes. You know?
Very true.
Whether it is you're a golfer and they visualize making this long putt. And they do it when it happens because they say, I can do it. So that positivity, you know. But see, for us, it's not just a psychological technique. It comes from the trust in the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that this God will never allow me to face anything that I can't face.
Mm-hmm.
And if I have to face that, He will give me the strength, the grace. St. Francis of Sales, one of the great spiritual fathers, he used to say, don't worry about tomorrow. The God who took care of you yesterday and today will take care of you tomorrow. He won't put you in a situation that is beyond your strength.
Mm-hmm.
But if He puts you in that situation beyond your strength, He will give you the strength to bear it.
So very true. And even in my own life, there's times where you get, whether it's bad news or you get to a very scary period, it's hard to fall back on that. It's really hard. But what enables me to get closer to having that peace-filled trust in the Lord is taking the time out to actually reflect and to turn it over to Him. So to your point again, if you continue to go on this hamster wheel through life and don't take that time for that peaceful meditative prayer, it's very hard to get to that point.
Yes. You know, and then what happens is we, especially as Americans, we like to control.
Of course.
And we pretend to control. When you get a big sickness, when you get a tragedy, when you get bad news, you lose control and people freak out. But if you meditate and you pray and you put your trust in the Lord, knowing that He is in charge. No? Like one of the English poets said, you know, God is in His heaven, all is right with the world.
Mm, beautiful.
So to trust in Him.
Always good to hear from Father Brito and Sandy. Now to Megan Mio, Mission Education and Appeals Coordinator, who visits with Franciscan Sister Nancy Schramm about her 3 decades of missionary work in Brazil.
I just wanted to talk a little bit about the communities that you worked with. What sticks out in your memory, your ongoing relationships, I'm sure. What did you love most about the communities that you worked with there?
Well, it would definitely be the relationships I built up with people. Mm-hmm. In a church-based community, unlike many of our practices in the United States, you just see people in church on Sundays or on Saturdays if you go there. Mm-hmm. But in the church-based communities, because it's based in the neighborhood, mm-hmm. and so many people are Catholic, mm-hmm. all aspects of the person's life, mm-hmm. of your life, is shared with the community. And I'll never forget, we had one of the communities, we had a wonderful young woman, and most of the leaders were women. Mm-hmm. The men, you know, some men participated well, but majority of them were women leaders. Mm-hmm. And this one woman very suddenly died. And the first person her husband went to for help and support was me. He came to me, came to the convent. His wife had just died, and they don't have, well, they do have some funeral homes there, but in the area I was, they were very expensive. Mm-hmm. So everyone just took care of your own deceased relatives. Mm-hmm. So I, with a group of another three women, went and prepared her body for the wake. They do an all-day and all-night wake, and they have to be buried within 24 hours because of not embalming.
Sure. Yeah.
So it just touched me in so many ways that the people came to the sisters first. Because they knew that we were not there just for CCD, and we were not there just to say, will you pray the rosary for me, or sing at the Mass. Mm-hmm. We were there for their life. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that besides building relationships with the young people and the children, because the whole family participates. Mm-hmm. I learned so much about theology from drinking cafezinho in the kitchens of these women.
Mm-hmm.
It was just amazing.
Sometimes it seems so simple, but I think that story just speaks to me of the trust that they had in you and the other sisters, and the feeling that you were there with them, you were living with them. You weren't you were from the outside, I suppose, to a certain extent, but that they really felt that you understood their day to day existence, and that you would be with them even in this time of sorrow.
Yeah.
So the other question I have is that you were living in the Amazon region, Amazon rainforest region. Did you learn about the, you know, ecological situation there and about creation and any sort of theology around land and protection?
Well, actually, because we lived in the peripheral sides of the capital city, which we still do, we have one community that's farther into the jungle. Mm-hmm. The contact and the knowledge of it didn't come out so much until you know who Sting, the pop singer Sting, when he visited, he made it. He opened up the whole story about that. Up to that point, the Brazilian presidents were all saying, the Amazon is ours and we'll take care of the Amazon.
Fine.
But when he exposed what was going on, then of course we all became involved.
Wow.
And that was one of the reasons why Dorothy, Sister Dorothy, was involved also. Mm-hmm. She had been accompanying a group of people in Maranhão, which is our neighbor state, and because there was no land left, the government had decided to give, or at very low prices, small plots of lands to small farmers who wanted to go there. They could have it, they could, you know, raise their crops and then take them to market and help sustain their families.
Yeah.
So when they decided to move to Pará, she went with them. And the program was a legal, authorized government program. But what happened was the large ranch owners who wanted the land to raise cattle, or in those days, soybeans was very, very popular and in demand in the world, and Brazil had such a debt that, again, the government decided that this would be great to plant this so we could pay off our debt.
Mm-hmm.
These landowners tried to buy the small farmers out, but many of them didn't want to because that's what was going to sustain them.
Exactly,
so before we knew it, there were killings and houses being burned, and for many years this went on. Pará was the champion of deaths caused over land issues.
Wow, 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 wow. And so Sister Dorothy Stang, I mentioned at the top of the show, unfortunately, she was martyred in 2005. She was really standing up against the mistreatment of these workers, rural landowners, right?
Yeah, she was helping to organize them to demand their rights and protection from the government. Mm-hmm. And then she was also helping to bring what was happening to the forest, the deforestation, mm-hmm. to the outside world. Mm-hmm. And because she had, you know, so many contacts, being an American sister, she was getting the word out. And, of course, in August of 2004, we honored her with a special award at our Conference for Religious annual meeting. Mm. But and no one at that time thought they would dare kill her. She was 73 years old, wow. 74 years old.
Right.
But yeah. that February after that, mm-hmm. It happened. They followed her. They were paid gunmen. Mm-hmm. They were actually going to try to kill her the night before in the dark, but she was in a tent in a hammock with a number of other people, and they weren't sure who she was, so they waited. And then the next day in the morning, she was walking alone with her Bible, going to a meeting, mm-hmm. and she called out to one friend who lived on the way, and he said, "Well, you go ahead, sister, I'm coming after." Mm-hmm. And so she went ahead, and this man ended up seeing was an eyewitness. But he hid himself in the jungle because he was afraid he was going to be killed.
Well, yeah, obviously. Such a thing had been happening at that point.
Right. And the story he told at the trials, I attended all the trials, and I was a translator for the family and for the Sisters of Notre Dame who came from the States to attend. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, I do speak Portuguese. Mm-hmm. So one of the young men said to her, well, at first of all, when she perceived that what they were going to do, and she knew that then because she saw the guns, mm-hmm. she said, "You know, my son, you don't have to do this." Mm-hmm. And he looked at her with a straight face and said, "Those are the last words you're going to speak, old woman." Wow. And then she started reciting the Beatitudes. Mm. She held her Bible up to her chest and mm-hmm. recited, and they shot her.
Wow.
Yeah.
Talk about courage for mission.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
She is amazing. And actually, she's been a figure that we, in the mission office anyway, we've been talking about in preparation for the Synod on the Amazon and the Extraordinary Mission Month in October 2019 as a figure who kind of marries these two topics of care for creation and mission. And just with our last minute, would you like to just say a little bit about the connection of these areas of the Amazon and our all of God's creation and Extraordinary Mission Month?
Yes, I think that the Pope was very, very up to date in choosing this. Mm-hmm. The Amazon rainforest continues to be destroyed. Mm-hmm. Dorothy's death was not in vain in the fact that she has strengthened so many people in their faith. Mm-hmm. But I'm very sorry to say the resources I get are ones that say it's still being done. Mm-hmm. A priest, his name is Father Amaro, he was a priest supporting her in the time when she was there, and he's continued his work. Mm-hmm. He was arrested recently, and my understanding, he's still under house arrest because they're accusing him of doing the same thing that they accused, that the landowner said of Dorothy, that that she was being revolutionary and supplying guns.
Oh, my gosh.
So the struggle continues. We have to get the word out. I have recently read some interesting things on Care of Creation, a Franciscan book, and one of them said that now is the time to begin greening our religion and realizing this is no longer just an ecological question, but this is a moral question.
Wow.
This is the moral question for the world
and
our future.
Thanks to Megan and Sister Nancy for a very informative interview to wrap up our broadcast week. We close with a reminder that you can listen to all our local Catholic radio programs live or at your convenience by going to archchicago.org and clicking on the radio TV stamp. That's archchicago.org. Thanks for listening to us every Saturday morning here on Relevant Radio 950 and 930 AM. I'm Jim Dish for Catholic Chicago Week in Review. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Join us every Saturday morning for Catholic Chicago Week in Review. You can stream our programs live or listen to past programs by visiting our website, archchicago.org, and clicking on Radio TV. And please connect with Catholic Chicago on social media.